top stories, Iran calls on the United Nations to adopt a resolution condemning those behind the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Saudi Arabia conducts fresh airstrikes on Yemen, killing at least four civilians in the northwestern province of Sa'ada. South Africa holds a state funeral for Archbishop Desmond Tutu, with President Ramaphosa calling him the spiritual father of the nation. Welcome to the program. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. in 2020, has turned into a role model and a hero for the younger generation. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the enemies were under the delusion that with the martyrdom of General Soleimani, quote, they would be done with their job. However, the U.S. fled Afghanistan as a result of the sacrifices made by Soleimani. Ayatollah Khamenei also said Washington is inevitably pulling out of Iraq and only has an advisory role there without any military presence. Iran's leader warned Iraqi officials to be vigilant about the issue. Ayatollah Khamenei added the resistance front in Yemen is making gains while the enemy has been brought to its knees in Syria. The leader made the comments in a meeting with Soleimani's family and members of a commission set up to honor him. Iran calls on the United Nations to adopt a resolution condemning those behind the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The Iranian president's office has made the call in a letter to the president of the UN General Assembly. The letter says the impunity granted to the perpetrators of the drone strike poses a threat to international peace and security. It stresses that attacks on government and diplomatic officials are crimes against humanity and violate the UN Charter and international law on human rights. It warns that inaction on state terrorism can lead to devastating consequences for the international community. We spoke to the people of Afghanistan about the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Let's take a listen.
General Soleimani was a real revolutionary figure. He worked hard for the stability of the region. His death was a great tragedy for all Muslims in the region who are fighting arrogant powers. My condolences to his family and the Iranian people.
Martyr Soleimani showed that we can stand against any arrogant power and victory is for the righteous. He was a true Muslim. While many countries were supporting Daesh, he defeated the terrorist group in Iraq and Syria. Afghan youth learned many lessons from him. Today, all the freedom-seeking people in the world regard him as a role model.
General Soleimani's martyrdom resulted in the defeat of the U.S. He is a role model for all those who are fighting terrorist groups. No doubt about it.
He is a trans-regional character and does not belong to one country. All Afghan people should follow his path, and he is in our hearts. We all look at him as someone who defeated arrogant powers. By assassinating him, the U.S. wanted us to forget him, but this will never happen. The U.S. will never reach its goal.
Four Yemeni civilians have been killed and several others injured in Saudi Arabia's latest airstrikes against the southern neighbor. The casualties occurred in Ar-Raqu area in the northwestern province of Sa'ada. Saudi warplanes also pounded several other Yemeni provinces, including Ma'arib and Shabwa. Human rights groups say nearly 390 Yemenis have been killed in Saudi airstrikes, in Saudi strikes, in 2021 alone. The report says over 1,400 people have also been injured in the attacks. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have fallen victim to the onslaught Riyadh launched on their country in 2015. The ongoing war and its consequences have resulted in what the UN has called the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Well, it is the sixth anniversary of the Saudi execution of top dissident cleric Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr. In the eyes of many, that portended other gross human rights violations in the years to come. Take a look.
The announcement was short and shocking. In the early hours of January 2nd, 2016,
The Saudi Interior Ministry said prominent Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr had been executed alongside 46 others the kingdom had found guilty of engaging in terrorism and adopting a Takfiri ideology. His trial was held behind closed doors and he had no access to lawyers. Saudi authorities even reportedly refused to hand over the cleric's body to his family and buried him at an undisclosed cemetery. Sheikh Nimr was a vocal critic of the Riyadh regime. He rose to international prominence during the pro-democracy protests that broke out in the country's eastern province in 2011. Suffering from marginalization, injustice, and repression, the Shia-majority region demanded political reforms, freedom of expression, the release of political prisoners, and an end to economic, religious, and political discrimination. The 56-year-old cleric was revered as a leader and hero by the demonstrators, but despised as a thorn in the side by Saudi ruling family. Al Saud finally lost its patience in 2012 and arrested the cleric after shooting and injuring him. He was sentenced to death 2 years later. Sheikh Nimr was charged with instigating unrest and undermining the kingdom's security, allegations which he dismissed as baseless. The Saudi government tried to portray Nimr as a violent radical, but he went to great pains to avoid calling for violence and eschewed all but peaceful opposition to the government. He once urged protesters to resist police bullets, using only the roar of the word. The protests were met with heavy-handed crackdown by the Riyadh regime. Nimr's execution took place in defiance of international calls for his release. Even then United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged Saudi rulers to revoke the cleric's death verdict. He later expressed deep dismay at the execution. The trial itself came under criticism by human rights groups, which said the charges against the cleric were a violation of his right to free speech. Days of unrest and large-scale protests in Saudi Arabia that followed his arrest were a testament to his popularity. The death ruling and the subsequent execution sparked even angrier and more extensive protests, spilling over to many Muslim nations, including Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Afghanistan, and India, as well as Western capitals. His execution brought Saudi Arabia's dismal human rights record under spotlight again, with several international rights groups describing the killing as appalling. There was, however, very little denunciation, much less condemnation, from Saudi Arabia's Western backers. That was obviously not acceptable, but perhaps understandable, given their lucrative arms deals with the regime and its general role in protecting their interests in the region. Yet, there was also a backlash from that self-serving approach, with Saudi Arabia emboldened to commit more human rights violations as it sensed impunity. That was best manifested by the brazen murder and dismembering of dissident journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi in 2018.
Israel has carried out airstrikes against centers belonging to Palestinian resistance movements in the Gaza Strip. Our Gaza correspondent Ashraf Shannon has given us an update.
Many Israeli fighter jets attacked a Hamas training center in the west of the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. The Israeli regime fighter jets used at least six rockets to attack that place. Also, Israeli artillery attacked Hamas security posts and also Islamic Jihad training centers in the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Lahia, while Israeli gunboats fired flare shells into the skies of the coastal enclave. The Israeli regime claims that those air raids were in retaliation for two rockets that were allegedly launched from Gaza earlier in the morning and landed off the coast of Tel Aviv in the Mediterranean. This while tensions are running high in the Palestinian territories amid the fact that Palestinian prisoner Hisham Abu Hawash was reportedly in a state of coma because of the abuse he's faced inside Israeli prisons. And the Islamic Jihad's military wing, the Al-Quds Brigades, has warned that the death of Abu Hawash will only mean an assassination against the Palestinian figures, and they have warned the Israeli regime over the possibility of Abu Hawash's death.
To another one of our headline stories now, South Africa holds a state funeral for anti-apartheid icon Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Tutu died last Sunday at the age of 90, triggering grief at home and abroad for a life spent fighting injustice. President Cyril Ramaphosa accorded Tutu the official funeral usually reserved for presidents. He described the ceremony as a Category 1 funeral with religious characteristics. Ramaphosa lauded the late Nobel Peace Prize laureate as a moral compass, a national conscience.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu was without question a crusader in the struggle for freedom, for justice, for equality, and for peace, not only in South Africa, the country of his birth, but around the world as well.
Ramaphosa claimed the human rights pioneer as the, quote, spiritual father of their nation, of their new nation, that is. Famous for his modesty, Tutu gave instructions for a simple ceremony with a cheap coffin and donations for charity instead of floral tribute, followed by an eco-friendly cremation. The South African icon is recognized as a revered leader in the struggle against the country's apartheid regime in the 1980s. European countries report a fresh surge in COVID cases amid the rapid spread of the Omicron variant. Britain announced more than 162,000 infections, the biggest rise so far in daily cases there. In France, officials reported nearly 220,000 new cases. It was the fourth straight day in more than 200,000 new infections. French president has warned that the next few weeks will be difficult due to the recent surge in infections. In Italy, over 141,000 people have tested positive for the virus over the past day. The government has made mask wearing mandatory outdoors and banned open air events. Latest wave of infections is related to the highly transmissible Omicron variant first detected in South Africa in November of last year. Coronavirus is abating in Iran as the country reports record-breaking lows, of daily infections and related deaths. Health officials say 33 Iranians died of COVID in the past day. That's a record low since March 2020. Almost 1,000 new cases were also registered in the past day, the lowest since May 2020. The fall in new infections and deaths has been attributed to the intense nationwide vaccination drive. Roughly 60 million people have received the first jab, and nearly 52 million are fully vaccinated. The Ministry of Health says 120 million vaccines have been administered across Iran. That's enough to have vaccinated over 70% of the country's population. For Iran, 2021 was a year of transitions in both politics and foreign policy. The country also witnessed the deadly outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. This report takes a close look at some of the major occurrences in Iran in the past year. Let's take a look.
In 2021 saw a new administration take office in Iran, and new rounds of negotiations to revive the 2015 deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran also witnessed the breakout of the novel coronavirus in 2021 and the belated vaccination rollout, using both domestically produced and imported vaccines, dramatically reduced the fatalities by the year's end. We are going to take a closer look at the major events that took place in Iran in 2021. The signatories to the 2015 agreement, which called for the removal of sanctions on Iran in exchange for some nuclear curbs, came together in April to revive the accord. The United States was, of course, not directly taking part in the talks, with Iran as it unilaterally withdrew from the agreement in 2018. The negotiations started during the last year of former Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's administration. This came after the new administration in the White House publicly announced Washington's readiness to rejoin the JCPOA if Iran returned to full compliance with the deal. And there was the core of disagreement between the two sides. After the US withdrawal, Iran waited for a full year to see how the European sides will make amends for Washington's move. But after seeing no sign of meaningful action, Tehran started to gradually roll back on its commitments under the deal. Iran said it was entitled to do so, as per the terms of the agreement itself. For Iran, it was obvious that the ball was in the US court. Washington, however, insisted that it was in Iran's. Six rounds of talks in Vienna failed to yield an agreement to revive the deal. The talks eventually came to a grind in March, ahead of Iran's presidential election. Iranians went to the polls in June and elected Ebrahim Raisi as their next president. The former head of the judiciary won a landslide victory with 62% of the votes, raking in 18 million out of the 28 million ballots cast. In his first press conference, Raisi had this to say about the prospect of a meeting with the US president under his watch. Raisi also said Iran would prioritize relations with its neighbors. Soon after he took office, Tehran joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which could significantly boost Iran's trade ties with Russia, China, and other members of the bloc. Back in March, Iran signed a 25-year strategic partnership with China, which would see Beijing investing up to $400 billion in the country's economy. Iran's new foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, also chose Damascus for his first bilateral foreign visit. The trip meant that Iran would put its partners first. Tehran continued its support for its allies, including resistance groups in Palestine, as well as Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansarullah. With the new administration in charge, Iran also saw a dramatic boost to its vaccination campaign in 2021. Iran's COVID-related fatalities and cases hit new highs in August as the country reported a record daily toll of more than 700 to become the worst-hit nation in West Asia. Under its new administration, Iran began importing huge amounts of foreign vaccines while introducing its own homegrown jabs. This was achieved in the face of tough US sanctions.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
General Soleimani, in view of his fellow combatants. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. January 3rd, 2020 was the day when the great Satan, the United States, committed the heinous crime of assassinating the greatest commander of the Front of Resistance, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. This dastardly act of terror plunged not only Iran, but all free-spirited people in the world. Yousef Zadeh, the writer of the book Maybe Before the Morning Azan, was one of the soldiers of Martyr Soleimani during the eight-year Iraqi war against Iran. He had been captivated by Saddam's invading army and was imprisoned in Mosul camp. He writes that the most heartrending news after the news of Imam Khomeini's passing away was that of General Soleimani's martyrdom. The struggles of General Soleimani can be divided in three phases. The first phase was during the eight-year imposed war in 1980s. The second phase was in early 1990s in the east and southeast of the country for cleansing the region from rebels and counter-revolutionary elements. The third phase included almost one decade of his struggle against Takfiri al-Qaeda and Daesh terrorists who were directly and indirectly created and supported by the U.S., the Zionist regime, and their cohorts and accomplices in the Arab world. Martyr Soleimani, as an unmatched commander, attained various successes and brought security to the regions in Iran and Islamic countries, especially Iraq and Syria. During the war, he would design the best smart plans for battle, while he was the pioneer in implementing them. He, like all other commanders of the IRGC and the army, would always go first and then tell his forces to follow him. One of his fellow combatants says his office of command was the battlefront. He was always between our forces and the enemy forces, and the souls of his forces were very dear to him. That's why he would take over all operational designs, from reconnaissance of the battlefield to directing the forces with high sensitivity, and would send his forces to the battlefield after fully studying the information of the war scene and the enemy situation. The second phase of Martyr Soleimani's struggles included the post-eight-year war years. His friend and fellow combatant, Hassan Pelorak, says, "When the war ended and Haj Qasem came to Kerman, the issue of insecurity of the east of the country was raised. The leader said, 'Is not Qasem Soleimani there? Let him take over the job.' The leader's order was ratified in the National Security Council and the IRGC took it over. Then the Quds base was set up in the east of the country under the command of Mr. Soleimani. Martyr Soleimani would think and then act. One day he told me to announce public clemency in Giroft, Kahnuj, and areas out to mischief. He wanted to announce that whoever had weapons and had committed an error, he would be safe provided that he introduced himself and submitted his weapons in 3 days. Some protested, but Haj Qasem said, 'I have said this and I insist on it.' The very first day of public clemency, nearly 400 to 500 of rebels submitted their weapons. There was a long queue and there were so many weapons that we did not know how to transfer them. Within 2 days, the rebels came and submitted the weapons without shedding the blood of anyone. The region was secure and the entire Kerman province was safe and secure." The third and last phase of General Soleimani's honorable life and struggles occurred in his fight against different terrorist groups, particularly Daesh in Islamic countries. One of his fellow combatants says on his going to Syria, "After the start of the Islamic Awakening movement in Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia, clashes broke out in Syria with the U.S. meddling in direction. These clashes began in the regions of Dar'a, Duma, Rastan, Talbisia Hems and Bukamal and spread rapidly. They turned into armed conflict with the Axis of Wahhabi Takfiris against the Syrian legal government. They continued their advancement quickly under the aegis of the U.S. and Saudi regime. Almost all ground borders had fallen and only the Mediterranean marine border had remained. Armed forces had reached Jafr Susa, an area in Damascus, and their snipers could target the dome of Lady Zainab, peace upon her. The road reaching Damascus airport was closed. At this point, the leader of the Islamic Revolution told Haj Qasim, "Go and help so that the Syrian government does not fall and prevent the formation of innovative Wahhabi Takfiri government." He entered Syria and his arrival thwarted all plots. General Ahmad Karimpour, another fellow combatant of Lieutenant General Soleimani, says, "With the courage that he had, he would go into the center of danger, but he was quite careful about the life of his near ones and those who were around him. He would deter all the plans of the enemy with high ability to attain information from them. He foiled the enemy's goal in all countries and put into practice his anti-American will in the face of the arrogance." Secretary General of the Lebanese legendary anti-terrorist movement Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, says on Qasem Soleimani, "I envy of Haj Qasem, and I am happy for this and for him. He strove for this goal since his youth. God did us a favor that he lived for 60 years. We are not upset and scared. Rather, his pure blood has become an opportunity for the Islamic Ummah to get rid of this awe and occupation. Even if the efforts are difficult, victory will be close."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and since people in the West are celebrating the new year of the Gregorian calendar, we hereby present a thought-provoking statement from Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, as recorded in the Gospel of St. Barnabas, about the coming of the last prophet of God. "O Jesus, say to the unjust Israelites, you have cleaned your faces but sullied your hearts. Are you deceived against me, or are you challenging me? You are odorizing yourselves for people of this world, while your interiors are some as stinky carrions, as if you are dead people."
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We shall talk about the subject of infaq, or spending in the way of Allah, for the sake of Allah, to attain proximity to Allah, to attain nearness to Allah, ultimately to help one's own human fellows, brothers and sisters who are in need. And that is the goal of infaq. According to different verses of the Holy Quran, infaq should be for the pleasure of Allah. Of course, you can just go to verse 177 of chapter Al-Baqarah. You can find verses. There are as many as 60 verses in the Holy Quran which point to the concept of infaq. Infaq has to fulfill certain conditions and certain requirements in order for the results that we should achieve and gain. So, infaq or charity or spending in the way of Allah should fulfill certain conditions, and it should be for the welfare of the poor and without any expectations of reward. These are something which the Quran refers to, and there are verses that you can find that you should not give charity with the intention that you want to oblige other people. You see, lot, you should not give your sadaqah or charity or infaq or whatever you give to help other people with the intention that you want to oblige other people, or you want to tell him one day sooner or later that, okay, you are the one who helped him and he was in misery and you helped him. This should not be there, okay? Also, infaq should not be given for the purpose of pretense or showing off. You know, there are people who spend in public places and their intention is to simply kind of showing themselves to other people, okay, that they are people who give charity. It's useless. If you want to attain proximity to Allah, of course, you shouldn't do it for the sake of showing off. And that's why it's always recommended that you give your charity secretly. And infaq should be given secretly. It's better to give it secretly. And in that case, of course, you will earn the reward. And obviously, you will not attain true piety unless you give out of what you cherish. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. So you need to give something that you like to give, okay, that you like to have, but you want to give a portion of it or a part of it to the needy, to the poor people. Infaq is an important Quranic instruction which is given to all mankind, and particularly Muslims are the people addressed by these verses of the Quran. And this instruction means that you have to spend all your income and wealth beyond the requirements. Okay, you need something for your day-to-day expenses and for your day-to-day expenditures, and that's what you need. You have to keep it for yourself. But if you have wealth in excess of your needs, If you have money in excess of your needs and requirements, of course, you have to give a portion of it to the needy people. Quran actually has given extraordinary emphasis on the concept of charity and on spending out and giving something to the needy and to the poor people. That's what infaq is. Let's have a break and I'll be back to you in a few seconds. Infaq is one of the most important tools to run the economy of the Muslim society. The Muslim society cannot run without proper management, without proper economy. Islam is not opposed to wealth. We need money, we need economy, we need resources. But it should not be in the hand of one particular person or one particular organization. So everybody is supposed to work hard, everybody is supposed to have something to live with. But if he has something in excess of what he needs, then it is highly recommended that he give a part of it to the needy. So by doing infaq, actually a man does not lose his income and wealth, because Allah has given guarantees that he will be rewarded manifold. Quran says the parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 ears, sab'a sanabil, with 100 grains in every ear, and Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving and knowing. What a wonderful ayah of the Quran. If you give $1 as charity, it will multiply manifold until it becomes 100. You know, Wallahu yudha'ifu liman yasha, and of course God multiplies for whom He pleases. All of these benefits are subject to some conditions, of course. You know, these conditions must be fulfilled. For example, it should be only to get the pleasure of God. It should be only qurbatan ila Allah. You know, we should do everything to achieve closeness to Allah and proximity to Allah. And if there is such an intention behind whatever we do, then that result, that multiplication will take place. The infaq or spending should be for goodness and without any expectation of reward, without any obligation, without ending up and telling the recipient of the infaq, okay, I did help you, I did this and that, okay. There should not be any kind of obligation. And of course, the infaq should not be for showing off, you know, for publicity. If there is such thing, such an intention, then obviously it will wipe out all the benefits that we may achieve at the end of the day. Welcome to your program for a better life. One of the verses and one of the examples I give you, the example of the parable مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ. This is one important example. And there are many examples in the Quran. For example, zakat is one of the examples. Sadaqah, zakatul fitr. And these are obligatory infaq. Okay? These are obligatory manifestations of infaq. But there are also voluntary, mustahab, infaq. These are numerous, you know. There is a saying in the Quran, or there's a verse in the Quran which says, you will not attain true goodness until you give what you love. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا. You will not achieve goodness, you will not achieve righteousness, and you will not achieve piety until you give what you love. Okay? So infaq encircles all obligatory as well as voluntary ways of spending in the way of Allah. Infaq, generally speaking, is a kind of or as a type of charity in Islam that is given without any expectation, without any obligation, and there should be certain requirements, and these requirements should be fulfilled. And whatever we spend in the way of God, it should be for God's sake. At the end of the day, we will benefit from the charity, from the infaq that we do. The Quran says you should not destroy your sadaqah or your infaq by giving obligation to other people. And also the Quran says whatever you infaq you do, it is for yourself. وَمَا تُنْفِقُونَ إِلَّا ابْتِغَاءَ وَجْهِ اللَّهِ. And you should not infaq except for seeking the pleasure of Allah. God knows everything that we do. God is well aware of whatever we do, and whatever you spend in good, it will be repaid to you. You know, وَمَا تُنْفِقُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ يُوَفَّ إِلَيْكُمْ. It will be repaid to you in full, and you should not be wronged. So, dear brothers and sisters, there are many verses to be explained, and there are many, you know, concepts related to the concept of infaq which can be explained. Of course, the religious authorities, the exegetes of the Holy Quran, and the Muslim scholars have elaborated on this concept in detail. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
The mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
That's why we want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now they're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack library.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months it didn't come and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmagh for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries. Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. Five horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February. Albino animals are rare and very vulnerable, so when you find one, you need to make sure they get all the care they need to survive. And now, Colombian vets are doing all they can to help the very first case of an albino baby, Jaguarundi, that's been rescued there. Fire department volunteers rescued this female cub in the urban areas of the Abora Valley region. The vets are now giving it primary medical attention. The baby Jaguarundi will then be transferred to a conservation park in the city of Medellin for more protection. A local expert explains why they cannot put back the animal into the wild.
At this point, this animal cannot be released to the wild due to its albino condition. It is predisposed to certain health disorders, certain disadvantages when performing in the wild. Therefore, the only alternative for it is to end his life in a park such as this.
Albino animals face many difficulties in the wild and struggle with basic survival skills. They do not have good eyesight, and due to their lack of pigmentation, they cannot camouflage. Therefore, just like endangered species, human monitoring would increase their chances of survival.
Swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech capital to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was minus 6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, a Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since. Now the world's most powerful observatory is finally on its million-kilometer journey after several technical delays. The NASA telescope named James Webb blasted off into orbit on Saturday, heading to an outpost that's 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth. The observatory was in the making for some 3 decades and cost about $10 billion. It left Earth enclosed in a rocket and from a launch pad in South America. The journey will last a month. The telescope is the size of a tennis court. And if everything goes according to plan, it will enter service in June. Astronomers are hoping they can learn more about the origins of the universe once it starts beaming back new clues. The school in Spain is offering students an opportunity to join a special orchestra. The project dubbed The Music of Recycling brings unwanted junk back to life by transforming them into musical instruments. And here is how they sound. The project offers the instruments to the orchestra in one of Madrid's most disadvantaged neighborhoods. The students say the orchestra keeps them away from mischief and out of serious trouble while giving them an artistic outlet.
Several dozens of children are taking music classics classes for members of the orchestra as part of the project. The ensemble has put on several concerts across Spain, but because of the pandemic, they had to pause their performances. The project is run by a Spanish environmental group and is inspired by a similar orchestra in Paraguay.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
To most people, an eggshell is something that gets tossed in the garbage, but to one Chinese artist, the delicate eggshell is the chosen canvas to express art and create mini masterpieces. Zhu is a talented craftsman who has created a series of unique egg sculptures with the theme of Beijing's Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games. Icons of ice and snow sports, as well as etchings of the 2022 Olympic mascots, are showcased in this series. The thin and delicate texture of the shells adds to the difficulty of the craft, which creates a sense of fragile beauty. Zhu says his fascination with eggshell art started when he was very young.
The Christmas season is when people around the world left out a dose of joy in the form of Santas. But it's different in central Thailand on this Christmas Eve. Thai children were ecstatic to see Santa Claus's distributing presents, but this time, in the shape of elephants. Dressed in Santa costumes, five elephants carried dolls, face masks, and sanitizers for students. They were surrounded by many human Santa Clauses as well. But the students cheered with joy while reaching out for presents from the jumbos. Event managers say their goal was to encourage students to stay vigilant during the pandemic, plus they wanted to give the children some fun to look forward after months of virtual classes. The event is a yearly highlight for a school that caters to students from kindergarten to secondary level.
Scientists have made a stunning discovery inside a fossilized dinosaur egg. An embryo that's been preserved in a perfect shape. The embryo was found inside a 66 million year old fossil in a museum in the Chinese city of Guangzhou. Paleontologists say it's the best dinosaur embryo ever found. They're hoping it would help a lot in finding the links between modern birds and dinosaurs. The fossil belongs to a toothless Oviraptorosaur, a group of feathered dinosaurs that used to live in what's now Asia and North America. The embryo is nicknamed Baby Yin Liang after the Chinese museum that houses the fossil.
After almost 2 years of isolation due to the coronavirus pandemic, Mexicans are once again celebrating Christmas together in a fair in the capital, Mexico City. Here's more.
It is a joy that we've been planning for a long time to go out and to take this picture because we've been locked up for 2 years and we couldn't go out. Now there's green light. We decided to go out with the whole family to live these moments together.
A few things are different in the fair as far as Mexican tradition goes. Santa, and not the traditional three wise men, give out presents. Families also have their photos taken by the Father Christmas. These are rare moments amid the coronavirus pandemic. The attendees say the situation is complicated, but they will try their best to make it work. The festival has been made possible by the introduction of green passes, which indicate full vaccination against COVID.
Exchanging gifts is an inseparable and also the most joyful part of Christmas traditions. How about sharing the joy with animals? Now, a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali is doing so by giving presents to its animals. The presents are actually the animals' favorite foods served in a different way. Animals spend time unpacking the gifts decorated in Christmas theme, and then access the food they like the most. Feeding in this way arouses the animals' curiosity and fills them with excitement. Zookeepers say they want to show that animals always receive care at their zoo.
It is a very cool way to generate empathy for visitors. Although animals do not know that it's Christmas or that it's a special date, it is important to generate that message in visitors that we make care of our animals, and that for us it is important to share with them this Christmas season.
The zookeepers say they make use of enrichment strategies for their initiative. They actually stimulate the behaviors of a range of animals, even the species they keep in an aquarium. Running a marathon is pretty tough for most, but a group of people has upped the ante to take the competition to sub-zero temperatures of Antarctica. 62 people descended on the Union Glacier from around the world and ran over a 42-kilometer course. The area is just a few hundred kilometers from the South Pole. Soft snow and temperatures as low as minus 15 degrees Celsius did not stop Latvia Evia Rain from setting a women's record. The event was delayed for several days because of a massive storm that battered the area a week ago. Adventurers and athletes have been putting their strength to the test in the race every year since 2005. A tiny baby mouse deer takes its first steps into the world with a round body and spindly legs in a Polish zoo. It was born on December 2nd and now stands roughly 10 centimeters tall. The Warsaw Zoo got its first mouse deer last year and a second one last summer. Zoo staff are surprised that the pair of new arrivals have produced offspring so quickly. Mouse deer are among the smallest mammals. Even as adults, they only weigh around 2 kilograms. Contrary to their name, they are neither from mouse nor from deer species. Some mammalogists consider them living fossils because they haven't evolved much over millennia. Serving customers in a high-tech way. That's what a traditional restaurant in the German state of Bavaria does. What's the goal? The owner explains.
We decided ourselves for this robot because of the lack of staff. We looked for support in a technological form.